now then. It's all well and good to fight the chain of command when it's just yourself on the line. But what if you have a bunch of people depending on every single decision you make? Our first story today on the Chain of Command episode occurs on the streets of Iraq. Sensitive listeners should be aware, all of these scenes occur during a war zone, and as such, it does contain some violence.
For 13 months, Matt Cook managed to stay alive as an infantry soldier in Iraq.
My platoon was hit by, we know we kind of lost count, but maybe 15 to 18 IEDs. It soured me on Iraqis, and I think that's kind of an inevitable reaction to something like that when, you know, you lose really good friends. So the last bullet I fired from my rifle, we were, I think, about a month from going home. I think we were all really, really cautious because we've just survived 12, 13 months. You know, you don't want to take too many risks this close to making it through. It was afternoon, just before it gets dark. We're in Humvees. We're all in our gear, our vests, our body armor. We'd stopped traffic in both ways. We had our chem lights out. We had some cones out. Everything possibly that we could signal traffic to stop was out. And in the middle of it, one of my soldiers who's in the Humvee screams, "There's a car coming." I turn to look, and I see this sedan, and it's just flying at us. It picks up speed as it comes towards us. You know, you don't have but a few seconds to decide what to do. I've been in this situation, you know, many, many times with my platoon, and I think, is this going to be another situation where we shoot a civilian, or is this a situation where if I don't do anything, is this a car bomb and it's going to get inside our circle and blow us all up? I don't have time to really think this through because things are happening so quickly. So I looked at my weapon and I was watching him, you know, watching the car come at us through my ACOG, which is the scope of my rifle. I flip my safety to fire and I've got my finger on the trigger. Pulled the trigger, shot several times. I see my rounds enter this guy, and the ACOG on our weapons magnify really well. So he was wearing a white man dress, and I could just see my rounds going into him and polka dotting his white man dress with blood. And then, you know, he just stops. The car stops, and he slumps over. And I turn my back to it, thinking it's going to blow up and kill us all, to be perfectly honest. And then after a second or two, nothing happens, and I slowly turn around, and I see this old man leaning against his door, motionless. He was dead. I circle around the car. The glass is all broken, and there's several bullet holes in his vehicle. His car's smoking, and I pull him out onto the street, and his eyes are wide open, and I immediately notice that they're just gray, and they're covered with cataracts, and that he's probably damn near blind. Which is why he came at us. And while I'm searching the car, you know, I look at his glove box, and inside his glove box, he has his wallet. And that's where I find a picture of him with a young man. He's got his arm around this young man, and I'm only assuming that it was his son.
And at that moment, Matt, what did you feel, if anything?
It's hard to describe something like that. I'm in the middle of a really complicated place where people are out to kill us. And so I think I've done what I had to do to protect myself and to protect my soldiers.
And is there any guilt in there?
Well, I think it's hard to feel guilty in a moment like that when you've spent a year in a place where you've genuinely felt like everyone is trying to kill you. And it does, if you feel too guilty, then you begin to hesitate. What if that old man had actually been driving a bomb-laden vehicle? I knew I had to bury it and then deal with it later.
And when you went home, did you think about that old man when you were home?
I would say I knew that I should feel guilty, but I didn't. you know, my morals and everything I was ever taught about humanity, you know, is questioned, because I know what we, you know, what I did, and but I did not feel overwhelmingly guilty about it. What really wrecked me, I think, was this sort of survivor's guilt that, you know, I had a few friends and a soldier who I lost, and the lingering sort of sorrow I felt for their loss was something I had to deal with in a much more difficult way than, you know, say the old man, for instance. When I got back from my first deployment, I felt very unfulfilled. I felt like there was a lot of unfinished business in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and I really had a real desire to return. I knew I wanted to do a story, and I wanted to write about it. And then I contacted my old battalion commander, chatted with him about the possibility of doing it. Maybe it's extreme, but I felt like going back and embedding with my old unit was what I was really looking for. And it all happened very quickly, and once I fully committed and kind of bought my ticket, a sort of peace came over me about it, and I went from nervous to being just very, very excited. It was almost like getting ready for another deployment. When I got to the airport in Kabul, this one was incredibly different. You know, you're on your own, completely on my own, and I didn't have the support of 25, 26 well-armed men, you know, ready to jump on a grenade for me if I needed. I had no weapon. I just had my camera and my pack, and I genuinely started second-guessing myself in that moment. I was thinking about, I would be lying if I said I didn't think about just getting a return ticket and going back home, but Saeed, my driver, finally calls and tells me that he's outside. I just sort of took a deep breath and just stepped out, and we took off. So I rolled down my window, and I was just smelling the city, looking at everything, and I had my cell phone, and I did type in a message to my wife. In case anything were to happen, I was just going to hit send. I think the message that I had typed was, need help, call embassy, or something like that. We were on our way to Bagram. He's driven this road how many times? So he knows the road, and he's weaving in and out of traffic. We're cruising down this road, and we're going really fast, and we kind of turn this bend. And I see this Afghan police unit or army unit checkpoint, and they're stopping traffic. And Saeed just paying no attention whatsoever. He's just flying at this checkpoint. And I look at the Afghan soldiers, and I see them see us, and I see them really tense up and posture up. I mean, I had seen it so many times from the other end. Hit the imaginary brake below me, and, you know, I screamed at Saeed to stop. It's when he kind of jolts and he finally sees this Afghan unit on the street. They immediately raise their rifles at us. The dishka on the truck turns, and I couldn't, you know, maybe half a second away from shooting at us. He slams on the brake, and we slide onto the shoulder of the road. They run at the car, and they've got their AKs at our heads, and I was frozen. It was probably the scariest few moments of my life. We were really lucky to be alive, because if I had been them, I think I would have pulled the trigger, and I probably would have done it much sooner. There's no way I would have risked myself or any of my soldiers for moments of hesitation.
So why do you think they didn't shoot? Why were they so slow on that trigger where maybe you wouldn't have been?
That's a good question, and I've thought about that. But the truth is, you just can't compare them to the U.S. forces. They know the culture, and they know the dangers more than we do. When you're a soldier in a foreign country, everybody seems dangerous. Everybody seems out to kill you. There's a term called pseudo-speciation, which is when a soldier identifies the entire race of a country as an enemy because he is under attack. I was in a state of shock, to be honest with you. I hadn't had a rifle pointed at me in a long time. One of the first things I thought of was that old man that I had killed in Iraq. I think for the first time, it really hit me. And this old man I remember so specifically, I think, because when you're in combat, a lot of times everybody's shooting their weapons. So you don't really know if it's your round hitting someone. And with the old man, I could see my rounds hitting him through my ACOGs. He'd gotten so close to us. The weight of those consequences really, really sunk in. And I think thinking about this old man really kind of turned me inside out, to be honest with you.
What do you mean?
I always knew that what happened was a horrible thing, but I never really felt it. I felt it for the first time in a way that I had never felt before, but kind of knew that I should have. Does that make sense? It made me kind of realize how maddening the whole thing is.
We would like to thank Matt Cook for sharing his experience with The Snap. That piece was produced by Anna Sussman with sound design by Renzo Goriel.